I imagine Kuro could tell you more details about Shiro, Sara said. Even if your group of five was a harmonious, perfect community, there are always things that only girls can discuss between themselves. Like Ao told you. And what they talk about doesn't go outside the world of girls. Sometimes it's just chatter. But there are certain secrets we tightly protect. Especially so boys don't get wind of them. She gazed at the waiter, who was standing far off, almost as if she regretted ordering the lemon souffle. But then she seemed to reconsider and turned her gaze back to Tsukuru. Did the three of you boys have confidential talks like that? She asked. Not that I recall, Tsukuru said. Then what did you talk about? Sara asked. What did we talk about back then? Tsukuru thought about it, but couldn't remember. He was sure they'd talked a lot, enthusiastically, really opening up to each other. Yet, for the life of him, he couldn't recall a thing. You know, I can't remember, Tsukuru said. That's weird, Sara said, and she smiled. Next month I should be able to take a break from work, Tsukuru said. Once I get to that point, I'm thinking of going to Finland. I've cleared it with my boss, and there's no problem with me taking time off. When you set the dates, I can arrange the travel schedule for you, plane tickets, hotel reservations, and the like. I appreciate it, Tsukuru said. She lifted her glass and took a sip of water. She traced the lip of the glass with her finger. What was your time in high school like? Tsukuru asked. I didn't stand out very much. I was on the handball team, I wasn't pretty, and my grades were just so-so. You're sure you're not being modest? She laughed and shook her head. Modesty is a wonderful virtue, but it doesn't suit me. It's true, I didn't stand out at all. I don't think I meshed well with the whole education system. I never was a teacher's pet, or had any underclassmen who thought I was cool. There was no sign of any boyfriends, and I had a bad case of acne. I owned every Wham! CD imaginable, and always wore the boring white underwear my mother bought for me. But I did have a few good friends, two of them. We were never as close a group as you five, but we were good friends and could tell each other anything. They helped me get through those dull teenage years. Do you still see them? She nodded. Yes, we are still good friends. They are both married with children, so we can't meet that often, but we do get together for dinner every once in a while and talk nonstop for 3 hours. We tell each other everything. The waiter brought over the lemon souffle and espresso. Sara dug right in. Lemon souffle seemed to have been the right choice after all. Tsukuru looked back and forth between Sara as she ate, and the steam that rose from her espresso. Do you have any friends now? Sara asked. No. Nobody I would call a friend. Only the four people back in his Nagoya days were what he could have called friends. After that, although for just a short time, Haida was something close to it. But there was nobody else. Aren't you lonely without friends? I don't know, Tsukuru said. Even if I had some, I don't think I'd be able to open up and share secrets. Sara laughed. Women find that necessary, though sharing secrets is only one function of a friend. Of course. Would you like a bite of this souffle? It's delicious. No, you go ahead and finish it. Sara carefully ate the last bite of the souffle, then put her fork down, dabbed at her mouth with her napkin, and seemed lost in thought. Finally, she raised her head and looked across the table, straight at Tsukuru. After this, can we go to your place? Of course, Tsukuru said. He motioned to the waiter to bring the check. The handball team? Tsukuru asked. Don't ask, Sara said. Back at his apartment, they held each other. Tsukuru was overjoyed to make love to her again, that she had given him the chance to do so. On the sofa they caressed each other, then got into bed. Under her mint-green dress, she had on tiny black lace underwear.
"Did your mom buy these for you, too?" Tsukuru asked.
"You dummy," Sara laughed. "I bought them myself, like you need to ask."
"I don't see any more acne, either."
"What did you expect?"
She reached out and gently took his hard penis in her hand. But a little later, as he was entering her, his penis went limp. It was the first time in his life that this had happened to him, and it left him baffled and mystified. Everything around him became strangely quiet. Total silence in his ears, only the sound of his heart beating.
"Don't let it bother you," Sara said, stroking his back. "Just keep holding me. That's enough. Don't worry about anything."
"I don't get it," Tsukuru said. "All I've been thinking about these days is making love to you."
"Maybe you were looking forward to it too much. Though I am happy you were thinking about me like that."
They lay in bed, naked, leisurely stroking each other, but Tsukuru still wasn't able to get a decent erection. Finally, it was time for her to go home. They silently dressed, and Tsukuru walked her to the station. As they went, he apologized that things hadn't worked out.
"It doesn't matter at all, really. So there's nothing to worry about," Sara told him tenderly.
And she took hold of his hand. Her hand was small and warm. Tsukuru felt he should say something, but nothing came out. He just continued to feel her hand in his.
"I think there's something still bothering you," Sara said. "Going back to Nagoya and seeing your old friends for the first time in years, talking with them, learning all kinds of things at once, it must have shaken you up, more than you realize."
He did feel confused, that much was true. A door that had been shut for so long had swung open, and a reality he had turned his eyes away from until now, a reality he never could have anticipated, had come rushing back inside. And these facts were still jumbled in his mind, unable to settle.
"There's still something stuck inside you," Sara said, "something you can't accept. And the natural flow of emotions you should have is obstructed. I just get that feeling about you."
Tsukuru thought about what she had said.
"Not all the questions I had were cleared up by this trip to Nagoya. Is that what you mean?"
"Yes, it seems like it. I'm just saying," Sara said. Her expression turned serious, and then she added, "Now that certain things have become clear to you, it may have had the opposite effect, making the missing pieces even more significant."
Tsukuru sighed.
"I wonder if I've pried open a lid that I never should have touched."
"Temporarily, you might have," she said. "There may be some pushback for a while, but at least you've moved closer to solving it. That's what's important. Keep going a little further, and I'm sure you'll discover the right pieces that fill in the gaps."
"But it might take a long time."
Sara held on tightly to his hand, her grip surprisingly strong.
"There's no need to hurry. Just take your time. What I want to know most of all is whether or not you're hoping for a long-term relationship with me."
"Of course I am. I want to be with you for a long time."
"Really?"
"It's true," Tsukuru said firmly.
"Then I have no problem. We still have time and I'll wait. In the meantime, there are a couple of things I need to take care of."
"Take care of?"
Sara didn't respond, instead flashing him a cryptic smile.
"As soon as you can, I want you to go to Finland to see Kuro," she said, "and tell her exactly what's in your heart. I'm sure she'll tell you something important, something very important,
I have a hunch.
As he walked back alone from the station to his apartment, Tsukuru was seized by random thoughts. He had a strange sensation, as if time had, at a certain point, forked off into two branches. He thought of Shiro, of Haida, and of Sara. The past and present, memory and emotions, ran together as equals, side by side.
Maybe there really is something about me as a person, something deep down, he thought, that is crooked and warped. Maybe Shiro was right, that I have something unhinged and detached inside of me,
like the far side of the moon, forever cloaked in darkness. Maybe without realizing it, in a different place and different temporality, he really had raped Shiro and ripped her heart to shreds, crudely, brutally. And maybe that dark, hidden side will one day outstrip the outer side and completely consume it. Tsukuru nearly crossed the street against the light, and a taxi slammed on his brakes, the driver yelling an obscenity. Back in his apartment, he changed into pajamas and got into bed just before midnight. And right then, as if finally remembering to do so, he had an erection. A heroic, perfect, rock-hard erection. So massively hard he could barely believe it. He sighed deeply in the darkness at the irony of it. He got out of bed, switched on the light, took a bottle of Cutty Sark down from the shelf, and poured some into a small glass. He opened a book. After 1 a.m., it suddenly began to rain and gusts of wind began to blow. It was almost a storm, with plump raindrops pelting sideways against the window. Supposedly I raped Shiro in this very bed, Tsukuru suddenly thought, drugged her, numbed her, ripped off her clothes, and forced myself on her. She was a virgin. She felt terrible pain, and she bled, and with that everything changed 16 years ago. As he listened to the rain drum against the window, with these thoughts swirling around in his head, his room began to feel like an alien space, as if the room itself had developed its own will. Just being in there steadily drained away any ability to distinguish the real from the unreal. On one plane of reality, he'd never even touched Shiro's hand. Yet on another, he'd brutally raped her. Which reality had he stepped into now? The more he thought about it, the less certain he became. It was 2:30 when he finally got to sleep. Chapter 13. On weekends, Tsukuru went to the pool at the gym, a 10-minute bike ride from his apartment. He always swam the crawl at a set pace, completing 1,500 meters in 32 or 33 minutes. He let faster swimmers pass him. Trying to compete against other people wasn't in his nature. As always, on this day he found another swimmer whose speed was close to his and joined him in the same lane. The other man was young and lanky and wore a black competitive swimsuit, a black cap and goggles. Swimming eased Tsukuru's accumulated exhaustion and relaxed his tense muscles. Being in the water calmed him more than any other place. Swimming a half hour twice a week allowed him to maintain a calm balance between mind and body. He also found the water a great place to think, a kind of Zen meditation, he discovered. Once he got into the rhythm of the swimming, thoughts came to him, unhampered, like a dog let loose in a field.
Swimming feels wonderful, almost as good as flying through the air, Tsukuru explained to Sara one time. Have you ever flown through the air? She asked.
Not yet, Tsukuru said.
This morning, as he swam, thoughts of Sara came to him. He pictured her face, her body, and how he'd failed in bed. And he remembered several things she had said. Something is stuck inside you, she had told him, and the natural flow of emotions you should have is obstructed. She might be right, Tsukuru thought. At least from the outside, Tsukuru Tazaki's life was going well, with no particular problems to speak of. He'd graduated from a well-known engineering school, found a job in a railway company, working as a white-collar professional. His reputation in the company was sound, and his boss trusted him. Financially, he had no worries. When his father died, Tsukuru had inherited a substantial sum of money and the one-bedroom condo in a convenient location near the center of Tokyo. He had no loans. He hardly drank and didn't smoke, and had no expensive hobbies. He spent very little money. It wasn't that he was especially trying to economize or live an austere life, but he just couldn't think of ways to spend money. He had no need for a car and got by with a limited wardrobe. He bought books and CDs occasionally, but that didn't amount to much. He preferred cooking his own meals to eating out, and even washed his own sheets and ironed them. He was generally a quiet person, not good at socializing. Not that he lived a solitary life. He got along with others pretty well. He didn't go out looking for women on his own, but hadn't lacked for girlfriends. He was single, not bad-looking, reserved, well-groomed, and women tended to approach him. Or else acquaintances introduced him to women, which is how he had gotten to know Sara. To all appearances, at 36 he was enjoying a comfortable bachelor life. He was healthy, kept the pounds off, and had never been sick. Most people would see his life as going smoothly, with no major setbacks. His mother and older sister certainly saw it that way.
"You enjoy being single too much. That's why you don't feel like getting married," they told Tsukuru.
And they finally gave up on trying to set him up with potential marriage partners. His co-workers seemed to come to the same conclusion. Tsukuru had never lacked for anything in his life, or wanted something and suffered because he had been unable to obtain it. Because of this, he'd never experienced the joy of really wanting something and struggling to get it. His four high school friends had probably been the most valuable thing he'd ever had in his life. This relationship wasn't something he'd chosen himself, but more like something that had come to him naturally, like the grace of God. And long ago, again not through any choice of his own, he'd lost all of it. Or rather, had it stripped away. Sara was now one of the very few things he desired. He wasn't 100% certain of this, but he was powerfully drawn to her, and each time he saw her, this desire only grew. He was ready to sacrifice in order to have her. It was unusual for him to feel such a strong, raw emotion. Even so, he didn't know why, when he had tried to make love to her, he hadn't been able to perform. Something had impeded his desire. "Take your time. I can wait," Sara had said. But things weren't that simple. People are in constant motion, never stationary. No one knows what will happen next. These were the thoughts that ran through his head as he swam the 25-meter pool. Keeping a steady pace so as not to get out of breath, he'd turn his head slightly to one side and take a short breath, then slowly exhale underwater. The longer he swam, the more automatic this cycle became. The number of strokes he needed for each lap was the same each time. He gave himself up to the rhythm, counting only the number of turns. He suddenly noticed that he recognized the soles of the swimmer sharing the same lane. They were exactly the same as Haida's. He gulped, his rhythm thrown off, and inhaled water through his nose. His heart was pounding in his rib cage, and it took a while for his breathing to settle down. "These have to be Hayuda's soles," Tsukuru thought. "The size and shape are exactly the same. That simple, confident kick was identical. Even the bubbles the swimmer kicked up underwater, small, gentle, and as relaxed as his kick, were the same. Back when he and Hayata had swum together in the college pool, he'd always kept his eyes riveted on Hayata's soles. Like a person driving at night never takes his eyes off the taillights of the car ahead. Those feet were etched in his memory. Tsukuru stopped swimming, climbed out of the pool, and sat on the starting platform, waiting for the swimmer to turn and come back. But it wasn't Hayata. The cap and goggles hid his facial features. But now he realized this man was too tall, his shoulders too muscular. His neck was totally different, too. And he was too young, possibly still a college student. By now, Hayata would be in his mid-30s. Even though he knew it was someone else, Takuru's heart wouldn't settle down. He sat on a plastic chair by the side of the pool and watched the man continue to swim. His overall form, too, resembled Hayata's, almost exactly the same. No splash, no unnecessary sound. His elbows rose beautifully and smoothly in the air, his arms quietly entering the water again, thumb first. Smooth, nothing forced. Maintaining an introspective quiet seemed to be the main theme of his swimming style. Still, no matter how much his swimming style resembled Hayata's, this was not Hayata. The man finally stopped, got out of the pool, tugged off his black goggles and cap, and, rubbing his short hair vigorously with a towel, walked away. His face was angular, not anything like Hayata's at all. Tsukuru decided to call it a day, went to the locker room and showered. He biked back to his apartment and ate a simple breakfast. As he ate, a sudden thought struck him. Hayata is also one of the things that's blocking me inside. He was able to get the time off that he needed to travel to Finland without any trouble. His unused vacation time had piled up, like frozen snow underneath eaves. All his boss had said was, "Finland?" and shot him a dubious look. Tsukuru explained how a high school friend was living there, and he wanted to go visit. He figured he wouldn't have many chances to go to Finland in the future.
"What's there in Finland?" his boss asked. "Sibelius, Aki Kaurismäki films, Marimekko, Nokia, Moomin." Tsukuru listed all the names of famous Finnish things that he could think of. His boss shook his head, obviously indifferent to all of them. Tsukuru phoned Sara and decided on the departure date, setting the itinerary so he could take the non-stop Narita, Helsinki flight both ways. He'd leave Tokyo in 2 weeks, stay in Helsinki 4 nights, and then return to Tokyo.
"Are you going to get in touch with Kuro before you go?" Sara asked.
"No. I'll do what I did when I went to Nagoya, and not let her know I'm coming. Finland's a lot further away than Nagoya. The round trip takes a long time.
Maybe you'll get there and find out she left 3 days before for a summer holiday in Mallorca."
"If that's how it turns out, I can live with it. I'll just do some sightseeing in Finland and come home."
"If that's what you want, fine," Sara said.
"But since you're traveling all that way, how about seeing some other places while you're there?"
"Tallinn and St. Petersburg are just around the corner."
"Finland's enough," Tsukuru said. "I'll fly from Tokyo to Helsinki, spend 4 nights there, and then come back."
"I assume you have a passport."
"When I joined the company, they told us to keep it renewed so we could go on an overseas business trip if one came up. But I've never had an opportunity to use it."
"In Helsinki, you can get around well using English. But if you travel to the countryside, I'm not so sure. Our company has a small office in Helsinki, kind of a sub-branch. I'll contact them and let them know you're coming, so if you have any problems, you should stop by. A Finnish girl named Olga works there, and I'm sure she can help you."
"I appreciate it."
"The day after tomorrow, I have to go to London on business. Once I make the airline and hotel reservations, I'll email you the particulars. our Helsinki office address and phone number, too.
Sounds good.
Are you really going to go all the way to Helsinki to see her without getting in touch first? All the way across the Arctic Circle?
Is that too weird?
She laughed. Bold is the word I'd use for it. I feel like things will work out better that way. Just intuition, of course. Then I wish you good luck, Sara said. Could I see you once before you go? I'll be back from London at the beginning of next week.
Of course I'd like to see you, Tsukuru said. But I get the feeling it would be better if I go to Finland first.
Did something like intuition tell you that, too?
I think so. Something like intuition.
Do you rely on intuition a lot?
Not really. I've hardly ever done anything based on it up until now.
Just like you don't build a railway station on a hunch.
I mean, I don't even know if intuition is the right word. It's just something I felt all of a sudden.
Anyway, you feel that's the best way to go this time, right? Whether that's intuition or not.
While I was swimming in the pool the other day, I was thinking about all kinds of things. About you, about Helsinki. I'm not sure how to put it. Maybe like swimming upstream, back to my gut feelings.
While you were swimming?
I can think well when I'm swimming.
Sara paused for a time, as if impressed.
Like a salmon.
I don't know much about salmon.
Salmon travel a long way, driven by something, Sara said. Did you ever see Star Wars?
When I was a kid.
May the Force be with you, she said. So you don't lose out to the salmon.
Thanks. I'll get in touch when I'm back from Helsinki.
I'll be waiting.
She hung up. But it turned out that a few days before he was due to board the flight for Helsinki, Tsukuru did see Sara again, by chance. Sara, though, had no idea. That evening he went out to Aoyama to buy some presents for Kuro. Some small accessories for her and some Japanese picture books for her children. There was a good shop for these kinds of presents in a back street behind Aoyama Boulevard. After an hour or so of shopping, he felt like taking a break and went inside a cafe. He took a seat next to the large plate glass window, which faced Omotesando, ordered coffee and a tuna salad sandwich, and sat back to watch the scene outside on the twilight-bathed street. Most of the people passing by were couples. They looked extremely happy, as if they were on their way to some place special, where something delightful awaited them. As he watched, Tsukuru's mind grew still and tranquil. A quiet feeling, like a frozen tree on a windless winter night. But there was little pain mixed in. Over the years, Tsukuru had grown used to this mental image, so much so that it no longer brought him any particular pain. Still, he couldn't help thinking how nice it would be if Sara were with him. There was nothing he could do about that, though, as he was the one who'd turned her down. That was what he had wanted. He had frozen his own bare branches on this invigorating summer evening. Was that the right thing to have done? Tsukuru wasn't at all sure. Could he really trust his intuition? Maybe this wasn't intuition or anything like it, but just a baseless passing thought. May the Force be with you, Sara had said. For a while, Tsukuru thought about salmon and their long journey through dark seas, following instinct or intuition. Just then, Sara passed by in front of him. She was wearing the same mint-green short-sleeved dress she'd had on the other day, and the light brown pumps, and was walking down the gentle slope from Aoyama Boulevard toward Jingamaya. Tsukuru caught his breath and grimaced in spite of himself. He couldn't believe what he was seeing was real. For a few seconds, it felt as if she were an elaborate illusion generated by his solitary mind. But there was no doubt about it. This was the real, live Sara. Reflexively, he rose to his feet and nearly knocked over the table. Coffee spilled into the saucer. He soon sat back down. Beside Sara stood a middle-aged man, a powerfully built man of medium height, wearing a dark jacket, a blue shirt, and a navy blue tie with small dots, neatly groomed hair with a touch of gray. He looked to be in his early 50s, nice features despite the somewhat severe chin. His expression showed the sort of quiet, unassuming confidence that a certain kind of man that age exhibited. He and Sara were walking happily down the street, hand in hand. Tsukuru open-mouthed, like someone who'd lost the words he was just forming, watched them through the large window. They slowly passed in front of him, but Sara didn't glance in his direction. She was completely absorbed in talking with the man and paid no attention to her surroundings. The man said something, and she opened her mouth and laughed. Her white teeth showed clearly. Sara and the man were swallowed up into the evening crowd. Tsukuru kept looking in the direction they had disappeared in, clinging to a faint hope that Sara would return, that she might notice he was there and come back to explain. But she never came. Other people, with different faces and different looks, passed by, one after another. He shifted in his chair and gulped down some ice water. All that remained now was a quiet sorrow. He felt a sudden, stabbing pain in the left side of his chest, as if he had been pierced by a knife. It felt like hot blood was gushing out. Most likely it was blood. He hadn't felt such pain in a long time, not since the summer of his sophomore year in college, when his four friends had abandoned him. He closed his eyes, and as if floating in water, drifted in that world of pain. Still, being able to feel pain was good, he thought. It's when you can't even feel any pain anymore that you're in real trouble. All sorts of sounds mixed together into a sharp, terrible static, deep within his ears, the kind of noise that could only be perceived in the deepest possible silence. Not something you can hear from without, but a silence generated from your own internal organs. Everyone has their own special sound they live with, though they seldom have the chance to actually hear it. When he opened his eyes again, it was as if the world had been transformed. The plastic table, the plain white coffee cup, the half-eaten sandwich, the old self-winding Heuer watch on his left wrist, the memento from his father, the evening paper he had been reading, the trees lining the street outside, the show window of the store across the way, growing brighter as evening came on. Everything around him looked distorted. The outlines were uncertain, the sense of depth lacking, the scale entirely wrong. He breathed in deeply, again and again, and finally began to calm down. The pain he'd felt in his heart didn't stem from jealousy. Tsukuru knew what jealousy was like. He'd experienced it very vividly once, back in that dream, and the feeling remained with him even now. He knew how suffocating, how hopeless that sensation could be. But the pain he was feeling now was different. All he felt was sorrow, as if he had been abandoned at the bottom of a deep, dark pit. That's all it was, sorrow. That and simple physical pain. He actually found this comforting. What hurt him most wasn't the fact that Sara was walking down the street holding hands with another man, or the possibility that she might be going to sleep with the man. Of course, it pained him to imagine her undressing and getting into bed with someone else. It took great effort to wipe that mental picture from his mind. But Sara was a 38-year-old, independent woman, single and free. She had her own life, just as Tsukuru had his. She had the right to be with whomever she liked, wherever she wanted, to do whatever she wanted. What really shocked him, though, was how happy she looked. When she talked with that man, her whole face lit up. She had never showed such an unguarded expression when she was with Tsukuru, not once. With him, she always maintained a cool, controlled look. More than anything else, that's what tore unbearably at his heart. Back in his apartment, he got ready for the trip to Finland. Keeping busy would take his mind off things. Not that he had that much luggage to pack, just a few days' change of clothes, a pouch with toiletries, a couple of books to read on the plane, swimsuit and goggles, which he never went anywhere without, and a folding umbrella. Everything would fit neatly into one carry-on shoulder bag. He didn't even take a camera. What good were photos? What he was seeking was an actual person and actual words. Once he finished packing, he took out Liszt's Years of Pilgrimage for the first time in ages. The three-record set performed by Lazar Berman, the set Haida had left behind 15 years before. He still kept an old-style record player for the sole purpose of playing this record. He placed the first LP on the turntable, B-side up, and lowered the needle. First year, Switzerland. He sat down on the sofa, closed his eyes, and focused on the music. Le Mal du Pays was the eighth piece in the suite, the first track on the B-side. Usually, he started with that piece and listened until the fourth composition in second year, Italy, Petrarch's Sonnet 47. At that point, the side ended, and the needle automatically lifted from the record. Le Mal du Pays, the quiet, melancholy music gradually gave shape to the undefined sadness enveloping his heart, as if countless microscopic bits of pollen adhered to an invisible being concealed in the air, ultimately revealing, slowly and silently, its shape. This time the being took on the shape of Sara, Sara in her mint-green, short-sleeved dress. The ache in his heart returned, not an intense pain, but the memory of intense pain. "What did you expect?" Tsukuru asked himself. "A basically empty vessel has become empty once again. Who can you complain to about that?" People come to him, discover how empty he is, and leave. What's left is an empty, perhaps even emptier, Tsukuru Tazaki, all alone. Isn't that all there is to it? Still, sometimes they leave behind a small memento, like Haida and the boxed set of Years of Pilgrimage. He probably didn't simply forget it, but intentionally left it behind in Tsukuru's apartment. And Tsukuru loved that music, for it connected him to Haida and to Shiro. It was the vein that connected these three scattered people, a fragile, thin vein, but one that still had living red blood coursing through it. The power of music made it possible. Whenever he listened to that music, particularly Le Mal du Pays, vivid memories of the two of them swept over him. At times, it even felt like they were right beside him, quietly breathing. At a certain point, the two of them had vanished from his life, suddenly, without warning. No, it was less that they had left than that they had deliberately cut him off, abandoned him. Of course, that had hurt Tsukuru deeply, and that wound remained to this day. But in the end, wasn't it the two of them, Shiro and Haida, who had in a real sense of the term been wounded or injured? Recently, that view had taken hold of his mind. "Maybe I am just an empty, futile person," he thought. "But it was precisely because there was nothing inside of me that these people could find, if even for a short time, a place where they belonged. Like a nocturnal bird seeks a safe place to rest during the day in a vacant attic. The birds like that empty, dim, silent place. If that were true, then maybe he should be happy he was hollow. The final strains of Petrarch's Sonnet 47 vanished in the air. The recording ended, and the needle automatically lifted, moved to the side, returned to the armrest. He lowered the needle back to the beginning of the B-side of the LP. The needle quietly traced the grooves of the record, and once more Lazar Berman was playing, beautifully, ever so delicately. He listened to the whole side again, then changed into pajamas and got into bed. He switched off the light beside his bed, and once more felt grateful that what had taken hold of his heart was a deep sorrow, not the yoke of intense jealousy. That would have snatched away any hope for sleep. Finally, sleep came, wrapping him in its embrace. For several fleeting moments, he felt that familiar softness throughout his body. This, too, was one of the few things Tsukuru felt thankful for that night. In the midst of sleep, he heard birds calling out in the night. Chapter 14. As soon as he arrived at the Helsinki airport, Tsukuru exchanged his yen for euros, found a cell phone store, and bought the most basic prepaid phone they had. This done, he walked out of the terminal, his carry-on bag hanging from his shoulder, and walked to the taxi stand. He got into a taxi, an older model Mercedes-Benz, and told the driver the name of his hotel in the city. They left the airport and drove onto the highway. Though this was Tsukuru's first trip abroad, neither the deep green woods they passed nor the billboards in Finnish gave him the sense he had come, for the first time ever, to a foreign country. Obviously, it took much longer to come here than to go to Nagoya, but he felt no different than when he had gone back to his hometown. Only the currency in his wallet had changed. He wore his usual outfit, chinos, black polo shirt, sneakers, and a light brown cotton jacket. He'd brought the bare minimum when it came to extra clothes. He figured if he needed anything more, he could always buy it.
"Where are you from?" asked the taxi driver in English, shooting Tsukuru a glance in the rearview mirror.
He was a middle-aged man with a full, thick beard.
"Japan," Tsukuru replied.
"That's a long way to come with so little luggage."
"I don't like heavy baggage."
The driver laughed. "Who does? But before you know it, you're surrounded by it. That's life. C'est la vie."
And again he laughed happily. Tsukuru laughed along with him.
"What kind of work do you do?" the driver asked.
"I build railroad stations."
"You're an engineer?"
"Yes."
"And you came to Finland to build a station?"
"No, I came here on a vacation to visit a friend."
"That's good," the driver said. "Vacations and friends are the two best things in life."
Did all Finns like to make clever witticisms about life? Or was it just this one driver? Tsukuru hoped it was the latter. 30 minutes later, when the taxi pulled up in front of a hotel in downtown Helsinki, Tsukuru wasn't sure whether or not he should add a tip. He realized he hadn't checked this in the guidebook, or anything else about Finland, in fact. He added a little under 10% of what the meter said and gave it to the driver. The driver looked pleased and handed him a blank receipt, so it was probably the right decision. Even if it wasn't, the driver clearly wasn't upset. The hotel Sara had chosen for him was an old-fashioned place in the center of the city. A handsome blonde bellboy escorted him via an antique elevator to his room on the fourth floor. The furniture was old, the bed substantial, the walls covered with faded wallpaper with a pine needle pattern. There was an old clawfoot tub, and the windows opened vertically. The drapes were thick, with a thin lace curtain over the window. The whole place had a faintly nostalgic odor. Through the window, he could see green tram cars running down the middle of a broad boulevard. Overall, a comfortable, relaxing room. There was no coffee maker or LCD TV, but Tsukuru didn't mind. He wouldn't have used them anyway.
"Thank you. This room is fine," Tsukuru told the bellboy, and handed him 2 1-euro coins as a tip.
The bellboy grinned and softly slipped out of the room like a clever cat. By the time he had showered and changed, it was already evening. Outside, though, it was still bright as noon. A distinct half-moon hung above, like a battered piece of pumice stone that had been tossed by someone and gotten stuck in the sky. He went to the concierge desk in the lobby and got a free city map from the red-haired woman working there. He told her the address of Sara's travel agency, and the woman marked it in pen on the map. It was less than 3 blocks from the hotel. He followed the concierge's advice and bought a pass that was good for the city buses, subway, and streetcars. She told him how to ride these and gave him a map of the lines. The woman looked to be in her late 40s. She had light green eyes and was very kind. Every time he talked with an older woman, Tsukuru got a natural, calm feeling. This seemed true no matter where in the world he found himself. He went to a quiet corner of the lobby and used the cell phone he had bought at the airport to call Kuro's apartment in the city. The phone went to voicemail. A man's deep voice spoke in Finnish for about 20 seconds, and then there was a beep where he could leave a message. But Tsukuru hung up without saying anything. He waited a while and dialed again, with the same result. The voice on the message was probably Kuro's husband. Tsukuru had no idea what he was saying, of course, but he got an impression of a straightforward, positive person, the voice of a healthy man who lived a comfortable, relaxed life. Tsukuru hung up, put the phone back in his pocket, and took a deep breath. He didn't have a good feeling about this. Kuro might not be in the apartment now. She had a husband and 2 small children. It was July, and maybe, as Sara had thought, the whole family had decamped on a summer vacation to Mallorca. It was 6:30. The travel agency Sara had told him about was no doubt closed, but it couldn't hurt to try them. He took the cell phone out again and dialed the office number. Surprisingly, someone was still there. A woman's voice answered in Finnish.
"Excuse me, is Olga there?"
Tsukuru asked in English.
"I'm Olga," the woman replied in unaccented English. Tsukuru introduced himself and explained that Sara had suggested that he call.
"Yes, Mr. Tazaki. Sara told me about you," Olga said. Tsukuru explained the situation, how he'd come to see a friend, but when he called her, all he got was a recording in Finnish.
"Are you at your hotel now?"
"I am," Tsukuru said.
"I'm about to close the office for the day. I can be over there in a half hour. Can we meet in the lobby?"
Olga was blonde and wore tight jeans and a long-sleeved white t-shirt. She looked to be in her late 20s. She stood about 5'7" and had a full face with a rosy complexion. She looked like a girl born to a well-off farming family, raised with a gaggle of garrulous geese. Her hair was pulled back, and a black enamel bag dangled from her shoulder. She had good posture, like a courier with an important package to deliver, and took long strides as she walked into the hotel. They shook hands and sat down next to each other on a sofa in the middle of the lobby. Sara had been to Helsinki a number of times, and each time she visited, she had worked with Olga. So Olga was not only a business partner, but also, it seemed, a friend.
"I haven't seen Sara for a while. How is she?" Olga asked.
"She's fine," Tsukuru replied. "Work keeps her busy, and she's always flying off somewhere."
"When she called me, she said you were a close personal friend."
Tsukuru smiled. "A close personal friend."
he repeated to himself. I'll be happy to help in any way I can. Don't hesitate to ask. Olga beamed and looked him right in the eye.
Thank you.
He felt like she was sizing him up, deciding if he was good enough to be Sara's boyfriend. He hoped that he passed the test.
If you don't mind, let me listen to the message, Olga said.
Tsukuro took out his cell phone and dialed the number for Kuro's apartment. Olga, meanwhile, took out a memo pad and a thin gold pen from her bag and placed them on her lap. As soon as he heard it ring, he handed her the phone. Olga listened to the message with a serious look on her face and quickly noted down the requisite information. Then she hung up. She seemed like a smart, capable woman, and Tsukuro could imagine her and Sara getting along well.
The voice is the woman's husband, I think, Olga said. Last Friday they left their apartment and went to their summer cottage. They won't be back until the middle of August. He gave the phone number for the cottage.
Is it far away?
She shook her head. He didn't say where it is. What we know from the message is just the phone number, and that it's in Finland. If you call the number, you should be able to find out where it is.
If you could do that for me, I'd really appreciate it. But I do have one request, Tsukuro said. I don't want you to mention my name on the phone. If possible, I'd like to visit her without her knowing that I'm coming.
Olga seemed curious. Tsukuro explained.
She's a really good friend of mine from high school, but I haven't seen her for a long time. I don't think she has any idea that I came to see her. I'm hoping to surprise her.
A surprise, she said, opening her hands on her lap, palms up. That sounds like a lot of fun.
I hope she'll agree.
Was she your girlfriend? Olga asked.
Tsukuro shook his head.
No, it wasn't that kind of relationship. We belonged to the same group of friends, that's all. But we were very close.
She inclined her head a bit. Good friends in high school are hard to come by. I had one good friend in high school. We still see each other often.
Tsukuro nodded.
And your friend married a Finnish man and moved here. You haven't seen her for a long time, is that correct?
I haven't seen her for 16 years.
Olga rubbed her temple with her index finger a couple of times.
I understand. I'll try to get her address without mentioning your name. I'll think of a good way. Can you tell me her name?
Tsukuro wrote down Kuro's name in her memo pad.
What's the name of the town your high school was in?
Nagoya, Tsukuro told her.
Olga took his cell phone again and dialed the number given on the answering machine. The phone rang a few times, and then someone answered. Olga spoke to the person in Finnish, using a friendly tone. She explained something, the other person asked her a question, and again she gave a concise explanation. She said the name Eri several times. After a few rounds of this, the other person seemed convinced. Olga picked up her ballpoint pen and noted something down. She politely thanked the person and hung up.
It worked, she said.
I'm glad.
Their last name is Hatainen. The husband's first name is Edvard. He's spending the summer at their lakeside cottage outside a town called Hamenlina, northwest of Helsinki. Eri and the children are with him, of course.
How did you find that out without mentioning my name?
Olga smiled impishly. I told a tiny lie. I pretended to be a FedEx delivery person. I said I had a package addressed to Eri from Nagoya, Japan, and asked him where I should forward it. Her husband answered the phone and didn't hesitate to give me the forwarding address. Here it is.
She passed him a sheet from her memo pad. She stood up, went over to the concierge desk, and got a simple map of southern Finland. She spread the map open and marked the location of Hamenlinna. Here's where Hamenlinna is. I'll look up the address of their summer cottage on Google. The office is closed now, so I'll print it out tomorrow and give it to you then.
How long would it take to get there?
Well, it's about 100 kilometers. So from here, by car, you should allow about an hour and a half. The highway runs straight there. There are trains, too, but then you'd still need a car to get to their house.
I'll rent a car.
In Hamenlina, there's a lovely castle by the lakeside, and the house where Sibelius was born. But I imagine you have more important matters. Tomorrow, why don't you come by the office whenever's convenient for you? We open at 9. There's a car rental place nearby, and I'll take care of renting a car for you.
You've been a big help, Tsukuro said, thanking her.
A good friend of Sara's is a friend of mine, Oka said, and winked. I hope you can meet Eri, and that she'll be surprised.
I hope so. That's really why I came here.
Oka hesitated for a moment, then said, I know this is none of my business, but is there something very important that made you come all the way here to see her?
Important to me, perhaps, but maybe not to her. I came here to find that out.
It sounds kind of complicated.
Maybe too complicated for me to explain in English.
Olga laughed.
Some things in life are too complicated to explain in any language.
Tsukuru nodded. Coming up with witty sayings about life seemed, after all, to be a trait shared by all Finns. The long winters might have something to do with it, but she was right. This was a problem that had nothing to do with language, most likely.
She stood up from the sofa, and Tsukuru stood up too and shook her hand.
Until tomorrow morning, then, she said. I imagine you're jet-lagged, and with the sun staying out so late at night, people who aren't used to it sometimes have trouble sleeping. It'd be a good idea to ask for a wake-up call.
I'll do that, Tsukuro said.
Olga slung her bag over her shoulder and strode off through the lobby and out the entrance. She didn't look back.
Tsukuru folded the paper she'd given him, put it in his wallet, and stuffed the map in his pocket. He left the hotel and wandered around the city. At least now he knew Eri's address. She was there, along with her husband and two small children. All that remained was whether she would see him. He might have flown halfway around the world to see her, but she might well refuse to meet him. It was entirely possible. According to Ao, it was Kuro who had first taken Shiro's side regarding the rape, the one who'd pushed them to cut off Tsukuro. He couldn't imagine what sort of feelings she had for him after Shiro's murder and the breakup of the group. She might feel totally indifferent toward him. All he could do was go see her and find out. It was after 8 p.m., but as Olga had said, the sun showed no signs of setting. Many stores were still open, and the streets, still as bright as day, were crowded with pedestrians. People filled the cafes, drinking beer and wine, and chatting. As he walked down the old streets lined with round paving stones, Tsukuru caught a whiff of fish being grilled. It reminded him of grilled mackerel in Japanese diners. Hungry, he followed the smell into a side street, but couldn't locate the source. As he searched the streets, the smell grew fainter and then vanished. It was too much trouble to search for somewhere to eat, so he went into a nearby pizzeria, sat down at an outdoor table, and ordered iced tea and a margarita pizza. He could hear Sara laughing at him.
You flew all the way to Finland and you ate a margarita pizza?
She would definitely be amused by this. But the pizza turned out to be delicious, much better than he had expected. They had baked it in a real coal oven, and it was thin and crispy, with fragrant charcoal marks on the crust. This casual pizzeria was nearly full of families and young couples. There was a group of students, too. Everyone was drinking either beer or wine, and many were puffing away on cigarettes. The only one Tsukuru could see sitting alone, drinking iced tea while he ate his pizza, was himself. Everyone else was talking loudly, boisterously, and the words he overheard were all, he imagined, Finnish. The restaurant seemed to cater to locals, not tourists. It finally struck him. He was far from Japan, in another country.